Okay, it is 2:15 b'teisha v'reva b'eretz Yisrael. Amarnu shenatchil hashir b'ivrit, but we'll really do the shir in English. So, a pleasure to welcome back Ilana Sofer Eltsufan, with the second part of her shir on tefillah b'tzibur and minyan and woman, etc. So, v'akasha, Ilana.
Okay. We're going to do tonight, we have just one more very small topic in Minyan that we're going to cover hopefully in about 5 minutes. And then I really want us to go on to the idea of Tefillah B'Tzibur. What is public prayer, communal prayer? What is the role of the Shaliach Tzibur, the person who leads the Tefillah? How does it work for women? How does it work for men? This is something that we've had, unfortunately, you know, over the past year, there's been a lot of change in how Tefillah B'Tzibur works. So we won't be getting into that too much, but so we're going to start. I'm going to share my screen. Let's see. I'm going to do this. Share screen. And clear. Okay. Is everybody seeing my screen with the source sheet? We're good? Okay. Yes. So I don't know how many people have been in situations where there are 9 men in shul and there are children or a child, and there's a discussion of whether a boy under bar mitzvah can count as the 10th. I know when I was a kid, people sometimes talked about this. I don't recall anyone ever doing this. So it's a real idea. It goes back to a Gemara. The Gemara is a Gemara in Brachot, and it says like this, right? Da'amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, afal pisha amru, katan hamutal ba'arisa ein mezamnin alav, aval osin oto snif la'asara. They say a baby, we're not even talking about a kid, a baby in a cradle. We don't count him for a zimun. Here we're talking, I think, about a zimun of at all, right? But we make him an adjunct. He can count sort of towards the 10. When we're making a zimun, right, and you have 10 people, and you say Elokeinu. So if you have 9 men and a baby, that could count for 10. V'amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, tisha'a v'eved mitztarfim. Not only can you count a baby, you can count a bondsman. Right? A bondsman generally has a halacha similar to a woman. And generally would not count towards 10, right? Also in a minyan. Beitive. So now we're going to bring another source, a challenge. Ma'aseh Rabbi Eliezer shenichnas lebeit haKnesset v'lo matza asara. Rabbi Eliezer came into shul and there weren't 10 people there, 10 men there. V'shichrer avdo v'yishlimo la'asara. So what did he do? Well, he happened to have a bondsman, a slave, a bondsman with him. So he said, okay, you're free. He freed the bondsman on the spot. Poof, he counts for a minyan. Okay. Shichrer in, lo shichrer lo. Okay, he had to free him. If he hadn't freed him, he couldn't have just counted the bondsman, right? Presumably, the reason why he freed the bondsman was because that was the only way to count him for a minyan. No, so we answer up, trades trichu. Actually, there were only 8 men, 8 free men in shul. Shichrer chad, and he had 2 bondsmen with him. Okay, so he released one, v'nafik b'chad, and one he counted while he was still in a state of bondage. So we have a little bit of an argument about what Rabbi Eliezer really did. Is it possible to count a bondsman who isn't free, who has not been freed, or do you have to free him? And in any case, the conclusion of the Gemara, v'leit hilchata k'chol hani shmaitata. But the halacha is not like any of this. Okay, this is all a very interesting theoretical discussion, but it's not how we paskin. Tosfot Rabbi Rishir Leon gets into it a little bit more. And he points out, right, da'al kol be asara shar yishchinte, right? Really, the shchin is there whenever there are 10. Right, we talked about how there's a special presence of the Shechina with 10, no matter who the 10 are. The pasuk we saw that's the basis for minyan, doesn't matter, adults, children, But for a minion, nevertheless, ubilvad shiutisha gedolim detzfei michad lo. But you still need nine of them to be adults. They're saying children or have some kind of significance in terms of the spiritual level of minion. On the other hand, we do need nine adults. Kedarminon gabi evid, we say regarding counting a bondsman. It doesn't show so much honor towards heaven if we're counting someone who isn't free. But an evid is also included in nikdashti. Deshchina sharya akol mechuyavei mitzvot uvnei brit. Now that's an interesting phrase. The Shechina dwells on all who are obligated in mitzvot, and that includes even people who are not obligated in all of the mitzvot in which free men are obligated. So that might include children who are obligated as a matter of chinuch, as a matter of education. It might include women and bondsmen who are obligated in most mitzvot, but not all mitzvot. And then it says uvnei brit. So we're not totally sure if bnei brit means people who are part of the covenant in a sort of a broad sense that Judaism is a covenantal relationship with God, a brit, which includes women, or if b'nei brit includes people who have a brit milah, which does not include women. So there we don't know if this theoretical construct could even expand to the point of including women. And in any case, it goes on, Vagam Rebbe, which is Ri Heshivani, Afal Pisha Rabbeinu Tam, Ma'alat Kvodo Hitir Lasot Katan Snif Lasara Utfila Belo Chumash Biyado. Ri would do it. Rabbeinu Tam would permitted it in theory. This is another one, a child holding a Chumash. Hulo Haya Noheg Kein, Velo Asa Ma'aseh. It was all in theory. In practice, if they were actually in the Beit HaKnesset and there were nine men and one boy, they did not count the boy. V'gam Rebbe lo ratza lasot katan v'sefer Torah snif latzvila. And Reed did not also want to count in practice. The idea is to count a child holding a sefer Torah, a child holding a chumash. In practice, we don't do it. So just as the Gemara concluded, this is all a very interesting discussion, but it's not the halacha. Tosfot Reis Elyon here also concludes it's not the halacha. Now, Mordechai brings a very interesting statement in the name of Rabbeinu Simcha. Matzati b'shem Rabbeinu Simcha eved v'isha mitztarfin, right? We can count a bondsman or a woman as the tenth. This is a little bit out of context, but it's counting only as the tenth, either a tenth for minion or a tenth for a zimun of ten that says Elokeinu. That opinion of Rabbeinu Simcha that explicitly mentions a woman is really sort of a lone opinion. And the Beit Yosef, even though he sort of goes back and forth a little bit about counting a bondsman, says, "V'kei nahaguha olam shelo letzareif isha klal, a woman certainly we don't count." And in the Shulchan Aruch, where it says, again, they're not very happy even about counting a boy, but in pressing situation, ein limchot, we won't protest counting a boy. But there's no mention of counting a woman. So even though this is sort of an interesting curiosity to bring, that Rabbeinu Simcha mentioned the possibility of maybe counting a woman as 10th, and I think a lot of us have been in a situation where that might have been relevant. In practice, it's completely not a ma'aseh. It's one opinion that was mentioned in a hypothetical way, and that's not what we do. In a practice, a minyan requires 10 adult men. So the main minyan that we've been talking about here is the minyan for tefillah. And when we talk about tefillah, when Chazal used the word tefillah, they mean what tefillah? They mean Shmona Esrei. or Amida, right? The silent Amida, right, is the key part of tefillah. That's the main real prayer that we have, right? The structure of each service is built around the Amida. In Mincha, that's pretty much what there is. There's, you know, Ashrei at the beginning and Tachanun and Aleinu at the end, but it's basically the Shmona Esrei. In Shacharit and Mariv, there's Kriyat Shema and its associated Brachot, and then the Shmona Esrei, but that's really the key portion of Tefillah. That's what Tefillah B'Tzibur is. When we want to talk about Tefillah B'Tzibur, we're talking primarily about reciting Shmona Esrei B'Tzibur. Now the question is really, which Shmona Esrei are we talking about when we talk about Tefillah B'Tzibur? So there, right, there's the silent Amida, and then there's the repetition of the Amida. So the truth is they both have significance when done as a group. Rav Soloveitchik said when the whole community recites the Shmona Esrei silently together, you can call that Tefillat HaTzibur, the prayer of the community, the prayer of the congregation is Tefillat HaTzibur. And even though there's nothing obviously communal going on, everybody is quietly davening directly to God, you know, all in the presence of each other, all together in shul, but everybody's personally standing before God, and everybody's personally, you know, asking for mercy and praising and thanking and all of the things we do when we daven. Nevertheless, it is a different halachic entity, a different spiritual experience, a different theological significance, a different halachic entity, whatever we want to say, when we do that within a minyan to when we do that really on our own. So that even though prayer, and we saw prayer is rachme, prayer is something that each person does on their own, there's also significance to tefillat hatzibur, everybody davening together silently. And then there's also tefillah b'tzibur, which is when the what's it called? I don't want to go down there. Okay. Which is the Shaliach Tzibor repeating the Amida for everybody. And we're going to get into a little bit what's the reason why we have the repetition of the Amida at all. Now, what's primary? So there really are two strains of thought in halacha. If we look at the Chai Adam, expresses the idea, and this is not new to the Chai Adam, right? The Ikar HaTfilah B'Tzibur Hu Tfilat Shmona Esrei. The primary communal prayer is Shmona Esrei. Dahainu Sheet Palulu Asara Anashim Shehem Gdolim Biyachad. Just the 10 adults praying together and everybody else who's with them. Obviously, it's not limited to those 10. We'll talk more about how women fit in. If women aren't counted towards the 10, how do women fit in the experience of being part of, being there and show when there are 10 men? Get to that soon. V'lo k'mo she'choshvin ha'amon she'hi ikar li'itpoel basara hu'rak mishim v'shmo ha'kadishu k'dusha u'baruchu. He says, the hamon, right? People have the wrong idea. Some people think, why should I come to shul and not daven at home? Because I can hear other things at shul. There are all kinds of devarim shabikusha. We talked about that idea before. That can only be recited with a minyan. If I'm not in shul, I'm not going to hear baruch hu. I'm not going to hear kaddish. I'm not going to hear kedusha. I want to hear those things, or I want to say those things, and that's why I'm going to come to shul and daven with a tzibur. And Chaim says, no, that's great, but that's not what the main thing you're coming for. The main thing you're coming for is to daven the silent amida together with everybody. Because your silent Amida Davins together with everybody means something different than your silent Amida Davin by yourself at home. Rambam, on the other hand, in the Mishnah Torah, when he defines Tfilat HaTzibur, Ketzad hi Tfilat HaTzibur, Ye'echad mitpoel b'kol ram v'hakol shom'im. Right? That's when one person davens out loud. He says the Shmona Esrei out loud, and everybody else listens. What's that? That's Chazarat HaShatz, right? So he says the main thing is the repetition of the Amidah, right? So we have there kind of two ways of looking at what's the most significant thing that's going on when we're talking about public prayer and shul. Is it everybody davening silently together? Or is it everybody hearing the repetition of the Amidah? Now, on some level, that argument goes all the way back to the Mishnah. Okay? There's a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. And the first opinion in the Mishnah, Stam opinion, Kishem Sheshaliach Tzibur Chayav, Kach Kol Yachid V'Yachid Chayav. Just as the Shaliach Tzibur, the person leading the prayers, is obligated to pray, every individual is obligated to pray. In other words, everybody needs to say their own silent Shmona Esrei, right? Each individual person needs to daven. Davening is not something that another person does for you. Okay? Rabban Gamliel Omer, this is the second opinion in the Mishnah, that's the opinion of Rabban Gamliel. Shaliach Tzibur Motzi et Harabim Yedei Chovatan. Okay? The Shaliach Tzibur discharges the obligation of the masses. In other words, the Shaliach Tzibur gets up there and says the Amidah, or the Shmona Esrei, out loud, and other people can fulfill their prayer obligation just by carefully listening to him with intention to discharge obligation. In a few minutes, we're going to get into the question of how can somebody discharge another person's prayer obligation, because it does not work the same way as discharging someone else's obligation in Kiddush or Megillah or benching or almost anything else where we have Shomea Ka'oneh. I say something and you can listen to me and be Yotze and discharge your obligation. Prayer is different because prayer is personal, right? I can't have a conversation on your behalf. I'm having a conversation with God. Someone else can't do that for me. But Rabban Gamliel says, nevertheless, the Shaliach Tzibur does discharge the obligation of the masses, and each individual person does not need to daven for themselves. You can not say anything by yourself, stand there quietly, listen carefully to the Shaliach Tzibur, and you have fulfilled your prayer obligation. Okay? Those are the two opinions in the Mishnah. So now the Gemara on that Mishnah, Gemara Rosh Hashanah Lamed Dalet. Okay. So Amar Lehem Rabban Gamliel. So now Rabban Gamliel is arguing with the Chachamim. The Chachamim is the first opinion in the Mishnah, right? So Rabban Gamliel says to them, he says to the sages, Lama Shaliach Tzibur Yored Lifnei HaTeva. If you say that everybody has to say a silent Amidah, what do you need a Shaliach Tzibur for at all? Why do you have a repetition? Why does he go down before the Aron? That's the phrase that Chazal usually use for leading davening. Why does the Shaliach Tzibur repeat the Amidah at all? Everybody has already said their own private Amidah. Amrulo, the sages replied, Kedei lehotzi et she'ino baki. Okay. Don't forget, we didn't have printing at that time. There were not so many siddurim. Not necessarily everybody even knew how to read if they did have siddurim. So a person who didn't know the tefillah by heart might not be able to daven, right? It's very nice to say everybody has to say their own tefillah balachash, their own silent amida. Not everybody can. So someone who isn't baki, someone who doesn't know it by heart, and doesn't have a sidur, or someone who isn't literate and doesn't know it by heart, and cannot say the tefillah balachash by themselves. And any reason why someone can't say the tefillah balachash by themselves, someone can't say the silent amida themselves, they rely on the Shaliach Tzibur. The Shaliach Tzibur is there for those who can't do it themselves. But lechachila, ideally, say Chazal, each person should do it themselves. We still need a Shaliach Tzibur for those who can't. And the it's not in the source sheet, but then the Gemara continues with the other argument. So then they ask Rabban Gamliel, well, why do you need to say the Sanhedrin? And he says, everybody just says it so that the Shliach Tzibor can kind of have time to gather his thoughts. But the primary tefillah is that of the Shliach Tzibor. Then it skips. This Gemara is actually on Lamed Hayam. Aleph Amar Rabbi Yochanan Halacha K'Rabban Gamliel Bebrachot Shel Rosh Hashanah V'Shel Yom HaKippurim. So Rabbi Yochanan says, during the year, when we say the Amidah every single day, we can pretty much count on people having it memorized. The tefillot of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are longer, and they're unique, and people don't necessarily have them memorized. Not everybody knows all those tefillot by heart. And who knows, maybe you have a Sidur, but you don't have a Machzor, who knows? Well, in any case, it's much harder for you. You have a certain level of people who are going to be able to say the Silent Amidah just fine during the year, on weekdays, on Shabbos. When it comes to the High Holy Days, to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they really aren't able to. So you say, on Yamim Naraim, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, really, people are much more likely to need to rely on the Shaliach Tzibor. But the rest of the time, no. The rest of the time, really, everybody should be saying their own. In practice, the Shulchan Aruch says, La'achar shesimu ha-tzibor tzfilatan yachzor Shaliach Tzibor ha-tzfila. Right? Everybody davens on their own. Yes, you all need to daven on your own. Afterwards, we have Chazarat Hashatz. Why? We have the repetition. She'im yesh mi she'eino yodei lehitpalel yechavein l'ma shehu omer v'yotze bo. Because maybe there's somebody there who doesn't know how to daven, and that person can discharge their obligation, can fulfill their prayer obligation by listening to the Shaliach Tzibor. But this is clearly b'di'avad, after the fact, in a non-ideal situation. You can fulfill your obligation through the Shaliach Tzibor. And the Mishnah Berurah points out that there should always be a Shaliach Tzibor. You say, well, nowadays you really need, everybody knows. You never know. You never know who's going to be in shul. Even if you think you know all about everybody who's in shul, you don't. And you always want to have maximum accessibility, right? Just like you say, nobody in my shul uses a wheelchair. What do I need a ramp for? Nobody, everyone in my shul can hear. What do I need sign language for? You never know what people are going to need. Okay? That says everybody in my shul knows how to daven. You don't know. You don't know who's going to walk in the door today. So we just say we always have a Shaliach Tzibor, and then we always have that answer for the guy who came into shul, the woman who came into shul, whoever, the person that came into shul and doesn't know how to daven and was counting on fulfilling their prayer obligation by listening to the Shaliach Tzibor. Therefore, we always have that repetition. But the primary prayer that we do is the prayer silently together as a community. Okay, we mentioned briefly the idea of Shomea Ka'one, which is usually our mechanism by which one person discharges the obligations of another individual or of a group, right? For example, Kiddush, right? One person, very typically one person at the Shabbat table recites Kiddush and everybody else says Amen. And in that they have all discharged their obligation of Kiddush on Shabbat. So Tefillah isn't like that, because Tefillah is something where I am supposed to be talking to God. I'm supposed to buy rachamim. I'm supposed to be asking for mercy, and I'm supposed to be praising God. I'm supposed to be doing that personally. How can somebody else pray for me? Praying is not something that one person can do for another. Prayer is personal. So we need another mechanism. If we're going to talk about how can somebody discharge my obligations, we're going to need to be talking about another mechanism. Now, an interesting thing about someone discharging my obligation in prayer, as opposed to someone discharging my obligation in kiddush, say, or in birkat hamazon and benching, we don't need a minion for kiddush, right? You can have two people at the table, or three or four. And one of them makes kiddush and discharges everybody else's obligation, right? There's no quorum, right? The minimum number of people is two, one person to say it and one person to listen. But that's not the case with prayer. Let's say I don't know how to pray. And I ask somebody else, hey, can you please pray for me? Pray out loud. And I say the Amida out loud and I'll listen and say Amen. Doesn't work. The only place it works, the only case where it works is if there is a minyan, if there is a tzibur. The reason it only works if there's a tzibur, the Rav Soloveitchik gets into this in the source here. He says it's not another person discharging your obligation. Here at the end, he says, ubatfila, right, with Kretschmann's fila, hatzibur hu hamotzi et hayechidim. The shaliach tzibur is acting as an agent of the tzibur because it's not the shaliach tzibur as an individual who is discharging another individual's obligations. It's the tzibur as an entity, the Jewish community, the microcosm of Klal Yisrael, microcosm of the Jewish people, and that is strong enough to discharge another person, everybody's obligations in prayer. But it's not, so the Shaliach Tzibur isn't acting as an individual in the same way that someone who says Kiddush for others is acting as an individual. He's representing the entity that is the Jewish community, the entity that is the Tzibur. And in that, it's a little bit similar to Korbanot, which makes sense, right? If you look up here at the at the Shoot Maharil, I'm going to grab some water. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back. If you look up here at the Maharil, he compares, right? He says, the hatfila hainu avodah. Prayer is like the avodah in the Beit HaMikdash. And in fact, the rabbis, when they said, what's our source of prayer? What's the source for our obligation to pray three times a day and the times of prayer and so on? They connected it to the tzmidim. Nami asmechinu rabbanan atzmidim. The rabbis connected the daily prayers to the sacrifices. We have shacharit that corresponds to the daily morning sacrifice and so on. Halamadita sheshaliach tzibur mitpalel o makriv korban shel tzibur. And then you have to have, you say everybody has to accept them. This has to do with the shaliach tzibur being acceptable to everybody. But the main idea is that he's comparing the shaliach tzibur who leads the congregation in prayer and potentially discharges our obligations in prayer to the Kohen who offers the daily sacrifice on behalf of the entire Jewish people. That's Parshat HaShavua, by the way, right? We're going to read Shkalim about how everybody pitches in the half shekel and therefore the public sacrifices, the daily sacrifices are brought on behalf of the entire Jewish people, right? But it's one Kohen or a number of Kohanim who actually do the avodah of bringing those sacrifices. They do that as agents of the community. And the role of the Shaliach Tzibur is similar. The Shaliach Tzibur is an agent of the community. Now, an agent of the community, if we say what we saw when we talked about Minyan, is that even though the community includes everyone and the community includes women, and we'll see that more explicitly soon, but the way that you create a Tzibur for Tfilah is with a group of 10 adult free men. That's how the tzibur for tefillah is constituted. And therefore the person who represents that group needs to be an adult free man. So a shaliach tzibur who is going to lead the tzibur in tefillah, in the Amidah, is going to be an adult free man. And that's why there really isn't room for a woman to be a shaliach tzibur, a shlichat tzibur. Because it's connected to the idea of the halachic tzibur, the halachic community, and that's connected to the idea of minyan. And minyan, as we saw last week, consists of 10 free adult men. If we want to look at the rest of davening, so the unit that goes from if we're talking about Shacharit or Maariv, right, the unit that goes from Baruch Hu through Kriyat Shema and the Brachot before and after Kriyat Shema and on to the Amidah and the repetition of the Amidah, that's really all one unit. It can't be split up. So there's one person who's going to do all of that. And since we know that the person who's going to lead the congregation in the Amidah and the repetition of the Amidah is going to be a man, clearly it's going to be a man who does that whole core davening. What about other parts of davening that might involve Devarim Shebikdusha? Could a woman lead those? So that's an interesting question. The Meiri says in a sort of a blanket way, he's talking, this is in the context of talking about Birkat HaMazon with 10. He says, Ve'ein davar shebikdusha masor l'nashim. Women do not recite a davar shebikdusha, anything, kedusha, kadosh baruch hu, et cetera, not recited by women. So women could not be a leader of the congregation for any of these things. Chavot Ya'ir has a very well-known tshuva where he talks about women saying kadosh, saying kadish yatom. And there he points out, Isha metuva al kiddush Hashem. A woman is saying, is commanded to sanctify Hashem, which can mean a lot of different things. We talked last week, one of them can talk about, for example, unfortunately, martyrdom, but whatever else. But he brings the idea that the nikdashti betoch b'nei Yisrael, the idea of that sanctifying God's name does fundamentally include women, even if minyan per se doesn't, as part of his argument that a woman can recite kaddish yatom, can recite mourner's kaddish. But aside from reciting Kaddish Yatom, which is an entirely different topic that will be, I'm sure, at least one session sometime in this series, we do not have women in general acting as Shlichat Tzibur. Let's get back for a moment to the question of women being part of the Tzibur, right? If a woman isn't part of the minyan and she can't be the shlichat tzibur, what's her relation to the tzibur? So here again, Rav Soloveitchik says, right? Afalpik sheyesh minyan anashim gam afalpik sheyesh minyan anashim. Even though women aren't part of the minyan, but when there is already a minyan, which is made of 10 free adult men. Gam isha mitzarefet imahem, a woman joins them, right? She joins together with them, lechefza shel tzibur, to the halachic entity of the tzibur. She becomes part of that halachic group that we call a tzibur. Shel hatzibur hamitzpoel, that halachic entity that is a praying congregation, a praying community. And the shaliach tzibur discharges her obligations as well as everybody else's. So a woman is undeniably a part of the tzibur. Once the tzibur is formed, and to form it, you need a minyan of 10 adult free men, then the women are also completely part of that tzibur. And that includes, obviously, from the Ezrat Nashim or wherever we are. And in fact, there are places in Chazal where we talk, which discusses very positively the idea of women davening tzibur as part of a tzibur of women attending shul, including during the week. Okay, so even though nowadays women very often come to shul on Shabbat morning, in some communities very often come on Friday night, the communities in which women come to shul, is everyone still seeing me? Okay, I'm good. All right. The communities in which women come to shul on a regular basis during the week in Orthodox communities depends. There are a lot of places where it's not common, but it is completely 100% okay. It's not one of these things that people raise questions about on a theoretical level. And for example, Yalkut Shimoni has a story, right? There's a story of a very old woman. And she was so old, she said, you know what, I'm already too old. I said, oh, I don't want to live anymore. And she came to Rabbi Yossi ben Chalaf and she said, What can I do? How can I get to the point where I die of old age already? I would like to die of old age. It's not happening. So he said to her, Ma mitzvah at gemudah lasot b'chol yom. She said, what mitzvah do you do every day? She said, every day, even if I have something I'm really enjoying, something I really want to do, I leave it aside and I get up early and I go to the Beit Knesset every day, right? Every day I get up early and I go to shul. And he said, stay home. Stay home from shul for 3 days, three consecutive days. Says, you want to die of old age? Then you have too much. Your daily attendance at tefillah is giving you too many merits. You have so many zechuyot. You have so many merits from coming to shul every day. That's what's keeping you alive. You don't want to stay alive. Stop going to shul for 3 days. Stop going to shul for 3 days. And on the third day, she became ill and she died. It's sort of an interesting kind of happy ending, but we see here that a woman attending shul every day is praiseworthy. There's another story in Sota of a widow. She said she had a shul in her neighborhood, but not only did she come to shul every day, but she went to shul every day in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yochanan. He said, you have closer shuls. You're walking far to get here. And she said, I get reward for the extra steps. I get reward not just for coming to shul, I get reward for walking farther to shul. Again, clearly, it is a good and praiseworthy thing for a woman to come to shul, even on a daily basis, and to be part of the tzibur. And her tefillah v'tzibur is an important and valuable part of the community's prayer. It's valuable for her, and it's valuable for the community. On one foot, it's not unusual, and it really depends on the community, and that, you know, if a woman wants to come to shul during the week, she may or may not find that the Ezrat Nashim is open. Or she may or may not find that the Ezrat Nashim is full of men, or that the lights are on. One of my colleagues, one of the Yoatzot Halacha, wrote a piece in the newspaper a few weeks ago where she said, you know, people say, well, we don't really need to leave the lights on or the door unlocked or kick the men out because women don't come. She says, why do women not come? Because you don't know about all the times that women came and the door was locked or the lights were off or the place was full of men and they quietly turned around and went home. So of course you think they don't come. And she's right. In other words, if the shul isn't welcoming, then it's really a vicious circle. And on the other hand, there really are shuls, and I've seen and I've heard about shuls, you know, where, for example, you know, they put a sign of 7, if you are not a woman, you should not be here. And that's very helpful because it's extremely uncomfortable. Right, men say, of course I would leave, but it's very, very uncomfortable to come into shul and say and ask the men to leave the women's section. And again, if the, you know, the gabbai or whoever is responsible, make sure that the women's section has, you know, lights, heating, air conditioning, and all those sorts of, you know, basic amenities, that makes a shul a more welcoming place to women. Because as we see here, there's absolutely nothing wrong and everything right about women who want to come into shul every day. On the other hand, a lot of women are not particularly inclined to come to shul every day. Sometimes it's a practical question, right? If you have young kids at home, then adding that into your schedule is not simple. Even if you don't have young kids at home, women are not in any way chayav to daven with a community. We'll see in a moment whether men are, but some women feel that their prayer really works better if they do it on their own, and that's 100% fine. I'm just going to finish this idea with an interesting little halach, but it includes some men who have already davened. In other words, you're trying to get together 10 men for a minyan and for menchase, and some of the men have already davened, right? Whatever. Okay, I'll do you a favor and stand here for davening again, even though I'm not going to be davening the silent Akidah because I already did, right? I davened mincha at 2 in the afternoon, And now it is 5 in the afternoon and you want me to join your minyan, bevakasha, but I won't be davening the silent amida. So can you do that? Can you have a minyan where you have fewer than 10 men davening the silent amida? So you need to have, I don't remember actually the halacha umaseh, maybe Jay can remind me. You have to have at least, I forget how much is the minimum of the men davening the silent amida. Six. Yeah. You have to have the majority of the minyan. You have to have at least 6 davening the silent amida. Can women count for that? So the Yad Eliyahu says, right? Im yesh be'ezah beit ha'kneset, katan o minyan shel shisha o shiva anashim shelo itpalu o shlosha itpalu. Right? There are 3 men, right? Right? Where does he say you? He seems to think you really need to have 10. But it does. So what he means is that for it to really count as Tzadava Tzibor, you need 10 people davening. Right? He says, Ein ze oleba tzibur letzvila. It doesn't count the silent amida, right? If you have 6 people, then that's okay for your Kaddish and so on. But what your silent amida? He says, Ein oleba tzvila letzibur ki im sheet palu asara anashim biyachad. He says, you need 10 people davening silently. Im nechshevet tfilat anashim b'chlal hatzibur. Can you count the women for that silent 10? And he says that even though you can't count women for things like Kaddish and Kedusha, ela al korchach nesh, but we're forced to say that tfilat nashim v'avadim mitztarfim letfilat hatzibur. He wants to suggest that maybe women, and he wants to say that women, he says, women and bondsmen count as part of the 10 so that your silent amida has 10. I actually did not get to the bottom of understanding this, I will confess, but there is an idea that there's even a halachic significance to women being part of the tzibur. And certainly there is a spiritual significance both for the woman and for the tzibur. The women are 100% part of the congregation, part of the tzibur, and should be welcome, and it's good for women to daven with a minyan if they want to daven with a minyan on Shabbos and on weekdays. Do women have to daven with a minyan? No. Do men have to daven with a minyan? That's also an interesting question. I'm going to see the Maharil again. It says an interesting phrase. Lehitpalel ba'asara eina kol kach mitzvah. Davening with 10 is not so much of a mitzvah. Diachol chaven l'tfilat tfilato beveto. Delo ashkechan asher etzrichu chachamim lehitpalel ba'asara. We don't find even a mitzvah derabanan, much less a mitzvah d'oraita, since tfilah itself is, as a lot of the details of it are all d'rabanan. There's no specific mitzvah per se to daven betzibor, even for men. It's not so much of a mitzvah. However, it is very, very, very strongly encouraged where possible. Okay, now I'm talking about in general, and I'm not talking during Corona. But in generally, when there are no pandemics, right? And when you live in a community where there's a minyan and where you can do it. So for men, right, the Torah says, Lo yitzplel adam ela bebeit ha'kneset im ha'tzibor. A person should only daven in shul with a minyan, with the tzibor. And the Shulchan Aruch also says, Yishtadel, a man should make an effort. Yishtadel adam yitzplel bebeit ha'kneset. Sorry, that's the im ha'tzibor. All right, sorry, I got, yes, okay, right? So a person should make a real effort to daven with the tzibur. A man should make an effort, sorry. This really, even though it says a person, Adam, a man should make an effort, even if it's not 100% a mitzvah. Now, a community should have a minyan. So it really depends a little bit where you live. If you live in the kind of community where really all the men are needed to make minyan, then you as a man have more of an obligation. If you live in the kind of community where there are 10 minyanim on every block, like, then you personally, it really has to do with your own avodah, not so much with your obligation towards the community. A woman certainly doesn't have an obligation to help the community make minyan because she can't. And a woman also has no specific obligation to daven with a tzibur. If that's good for her tefillah, if it's good for her avodat Hashem, if it's the right way for her to daven, it's fine and good and praiseworthy. It's not in any way considered problematic, but it's not, she's not required, right? Shvur Yaakov, right? It's one example of someone who says, Shahaisha eina metuva klal yitpoel basara. The woman's not obligated at all. A man is technically also doesn't really necessarily need to. He should try, he should make an effort. It's not exactly a mitzvah, though, even for a man. For a woman, it's bichlal, not a mitzvah. Nevertheless, again, we see that women do choose to daven with the tzibur if we want. On the other hand, some women really find, and some men really find, but men are in a more tricky situation because they do have a strong halachic encouragement to daven and shul. But the Gemara in Brachot says, Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Kach haya min hagosha Rabbi Akiva. What was Rabbi Akiva's practice? Kishahaya mitpalel im hatzibur, haya mekatzer va'ole, mifnei torach tzibur. When he was davening with the tzibur, he would shorten his prayer. He wouldn't daven on and on and on and on and on, because he didn't want everyone to wait for him. Yeah, right? If you have like a very big rabbi, like Rabbi Akiva, and he wants to take half an hour for his Shmona Esrei, everybody waits for him, and that's inconvenient for everybody else. But, and therefore he was considered. He said, if I'm davening b'tzibur, I will shorten my prayer to the pace at which everybody else davens, because I don't want them to sit around and wait for me, right? So Ben Adam L'Chaver says, I'm not gonna make everyone wait for me. Even if they don't have to, they probably will, right? But when he davens v'yachidus, when he davened on his own, Adam minicho b'zavit zo motzo b'zavit acheret. He would be like, a person would find him, would leave him in one side of the room and find him on the other side. He would like bow down and prostrate himself so much in the course of his prayer that he would find himself ending up in a totally different part of the room from where he started off. That was his, he had tremendous kavana when he davened b'yechidut. Some people have tremendous kavana when they daven on their own. So if they're a man, they have to balance their obligation to the community and their halachic encouragement to be part of a tzibur with the fact that they really daven well on their own. And maybe like Rabbi Akiva, sometimes they do one, sometimes the other. A woman davens best on her own, because someday a woman davens best on her own. She can daven on her own as much as she wants. No one's stopping her. She has no need to go to shul. On the other hand, she can go to shul. There's a dirge, a kina that Eliezer Rokach wrote for his wife, where he describes her as leading the prayers of the women, as attending shul and leading the prayers of the women. In a lot of shuls in historically, sometimes the women's section was so totally separate that the women were really davening as their own group, right? So Meshoreret Zmirot, she would sing, Meshoreret Zmirot Tefillah, she would sing the songs of the Tefillah, Medaberet Tachanonim, and speak supplication, Vidui B'chol Yom, V'nishmat Kochai V'chol Maminim, Noem, right? She every day would... a confession. It's hard to translate. There's a nice translation here. I'm not sure if I can, you know, write. Right. B'chol ha-medinot limda nashim u'mene'emet zemarim. So she was like leading the women in prayer separately as a separate group. Sidreit fila baboker uva'erev soderet. She would daven morning and night. She was the first person to come to the Beit HaKnesset and the last one to leave. So this is an example of a woman who is very, very connected to Tefillah B'Tzibur. Not clear how much of this is as part of the Tzibur that is a minion of men, and how much of this is as part of a sort of separate women's Tzibur. This gets a little bit into the question of women davening together as a separate tzibur, not a tzibur in the sense of minyan, women davening together as a group. Women davening together as a group has a long history right up to today. Women have all, I don't know, right? We see Rabbi Eliezer Rokach is discussing women, the women's shul, the women leading with the woman prayer leader. We know that goes back very far. There is even a little bit of halachic significance once you have a group that's at least three. It has the quantity right. It fulfills the pasuk Gadlu Hashem Iti in Roma Mashamo Yechdav, that many people are davening together. There's the Tshuvot Vanago, which is Rav Sternbuch, right, says God accepts, there's an extra level of God accepting tefillah when you have a group of three or more. And with Hallel, by the way, a group of three or more can also do the call and response parts of Hallel. One person says and the two people respond, also with three women. So there's certainly a value, for example, if, you know, especially now when people aren't always able to go to shul, if the women of the family, you know, daven together as a group, it's already a nice thing. Bigger groups of women, certainly in all girls' schools, the girls daven as a group, often with a chazanit, perfectly good and acceptable and a fine way to daven. Something that's very popular, especially in the Haredi world, maybe everywhere, I don't know, is women getting together to say Tehillim. I know that when, you know, having grown up in a conservative egalitarian environment, when I first encountered some of these women's Tehillim groups, you know, like a big group of women getting together to say Tehillim with a woman leading, and sometimes the woman leading is a woman who herself is very learned and, a real leader of the community, say, yeah, this is tefillah in a group. This is really very, very powerful experience. And that's, you know, the heart of Beis Yaakov land, you know, you will find this. Women getting together to say Tehillim, either out loud or everybody quietly together. There's a real value in that. There's some controversy when women do a, you know, say, we're having a women's tefillah group, as it were, at the same time, instead of davening with the main shul, we'll get together and have a women's group. There's, as long as they're not doing Dvarim Shebikdusha, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, halachically. Once we start talking about Kriyat HaTorah, then we get into some interesting questions, which we'll discuss at the time of Kriyat HaTorah, but just women getting together and davening together is fine and good. Again, we don't, certainly without Devarim Shebikdusha, and also not, one thing that is problematic is, say, a pretend repetition of the Shmona Esrei, which some groups do. For example, you know, if one woman, instead of davening silently, after everyone else has davened the Amida silently, she davens her own private Amida out loud as a sort of an imitation of the Chazarat HaShatz, that can be problematic because that's a kind of an inventing a ritual or an imitation of a different ritual that's not so great halachically, but just for women to get together and daven as a group is not tefillah b'tzibur in the sense of a minyan, and you're not going to have Devarim Shebikdusha. You can't have Baruch Hu and Kaddish and Kedusha. But the power of praying together has significance, not just sort of emotional significance for the women, but it has significance for how God receives our prayers as a group. That's a good thing. One topic, I see we're pretty much out of time. So on one foot, I think I skipped over the question of can a woman be a shaliach tzibur for something like Kabbalat Shabbat or Psukei Dezimra that doesn't really need a shaliach tzibur. In other words, can a woman be a chazanit for these parts of tefillah? There's a lot of discussion back and forth about whether that would ever be appropriate. One problem that's raised is there are possible tzniut concerns, both in terms of the mechitza, possibly in terms of koisha and so on. There are certainly concerns in terms of what is the received tradition of Orthodox shuls, you know, through the generations. Changing something like that, even if we aren't doing something of great halachic import, since you don't really need a shaliach tzibur at all for Kabbalat Shabbat, except, you know, sort of keep everyone on pace and choose the tunes. Nevertheless, doing something differently from the way it's always been done is not just a political consideration, it's also a halachic consideration. So there's a lot of back and forth and discussion about that, which I don't think we have too much time to get into. I do want to look at, I'm going to stop sharing, and I want to look at, oh, we have a few things in chat. So let me just check if there's anything in chat that I have to, and I should answer. Here we are. Okay. Is it possible to hear Kriyat HaMegillah on Zoom? Okay. I'm not the person you should ask that question to. But certainly, you know, your local halachic authorities, there are certainly room to for a lot of things that we wouldn't ordinarily be doing because we don't have a choice. So certainly if there's, you know, that will be discussed by a lot of people who are much better prepared to discuss it than I am. Okay, sources are here. A question, a fully freed bondsman has to stick around for a prayer service or can he go on his way? Freed with condition. Well, no one can compel him, but, you know, it would be nice for him to stay, I think. You know, I assume that he was certainly freed on the expectation that he would stay. I think that it would be proper for him to offer that, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes to be part of the minyan, and that he would want to do that, but, you know, you can't make him. He's not a bondsman anymore. Okay. Sorry, you're right. I think you did have an opposite and I got mixed up. The silent Shemoneh Esrei is Tzvila B'Tzibur and Chazarat Hashatz is Tzvila Tatzibur. Correct. I'm sorry. I was, I mixed up the two. I apologize. Okay. Rav Soloveitchik either added or articulated a new stringency. Combining the 10 needed to say Devarim Shabikdusha with the role of the prayer leader that wasn't stated as such in Talmudic times. I'm not sure. This is from iPad. So, yes, okay. Okay. Is the Rabbi Akiva story a challenge to the statement that everyone should only pray in a Beit Knesset? I don't know if it's presented as a challenge, but I think it's shows you that tefillah is something that's complicated because tefillah is at its heart something that's very personal and private and individual, and for some people really is better on their own. So it's, I don't know, it's a dichotomy, a tension. I don't know if challenge is exactly the right word, but yeah. Are women's prayer groups women praying together, or women praying separately together? Women praying together. In other words, there is a value when you have a group of women praying together as a community. That has value. It's not a minion. It's not technically a tzibur. But it is a form of communal prayer that I think that's what we saw also in the Tshuvot Vanagot, in that last source. It has its own value. Women praying separately together, that would be a bus, right? If you take any bus in Jerusalem during the morning rush hour, you will probably have at least 10 in religious neighborhoods, you'll probably have at least 10 women and girls davening Shachrit. That I think you would not call a women's prayer group. That is women praying individually together. But, you know, when women get together, you know, in a room with the, you know, and pray at the same time with the intent of being a community of people praying, then yes, that is, that has significance. If a woman in a women's field group says, say unto me out loud, So it doesn't help for women who don't know, because we saw that unlike most things where, say, for Kiddush, I can discharge your obligation, you know, without a minyan. You don't need a minyan to discharge someone else's obligation for Kiddush. With tefillah, it's really the essence of the tzibur. Having those 10 people is what makes it even possible for somebody to discharge anyone else's obligation. Because the shaliach tzibur is not discharging the obligation of the person who doesn't know as an individual. He's doing it as a representative of a tzibur, a minion of 10. If there isn't a minion of 10, there's no such thing as charging someone else's obligation in the Amida.
Excuse me, that was my question. I have an addition to it then. But it's not always about discharging someone's obligation. Sometimes it's like being the vocal PowerPoint presentation because they can't read Hebrew well. You know, being the person that they follow along with. I believe that you could argue.
Well, if somebody is perfectly fine to dive in the Amida in English or French or whatever you speak. So even if it's, there's a lot of criticism of that kind of thing that looks like the repetition of the Amida, but isn't, I think precisely because it looks like something that it actually isn't, which can be misleading, right? Maybe somebody thinks they could be Yotze the way that they could with a Shaliach Tzibur, and they can't because it's not the same thing. So I think doing something that looks like one ritual and isn't, and is a sort of an imitation or a pretend version of that ritual, is, among other things, potentially confusing halachically. Let's see. Zoom Megillah can be a very good idea and an obligation for people who should not be going to Shul. Good. Okay. That is our rabbi weighing in. That was what I assumed, but okay. Do these same rules apply with three people for Birkat HaMazon? Okay, Lori talked about that a couple of weeks ago. What do you mean by, I'm not sure what you mean by these same rules, but in general, we say that a three people.
I wasn't there for that class, sorry.
It's okay. Three people there, we usually say, needs to be either three men or three women. There are a few people who talk about possibly a mix, maybe just within a family, but in general, we say it's three men or three women. But there, obviously, since it can be three women, it's not at all the same consideration as with me. It's a question of whether the combination of men and women as a mixed group with halachic significance is appropriate, or whether we want to say that a group with halachic significance should either be a group of men or a group of women. But it's different. It's a completely different question from minyan, the question of zimun, because you can really have a women's zimun as well as a men's zimun. Yes. Wait, someone's raising their hand. Yes.
Hi. Yeah, hi. I had a question. You were saying it's not appropriate to do a mock repetition. What do you think is the status of when you do the women's tefillah does, you know, the first three brachot all together, like what men do when they're rushing or whatever, and then you go into, you know, after Atah Kadosh or before Atah Kadosh, I guess after Atah Kadosh.
Right. So then you do like a Hecha Kedusha.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting question. I think it's probably still in the realm of imitating what you would do in a minyan. And therefore, it's probably the same opinion or approach that would say that the imitation of a full repetition is problematic would say that the imitation of a Hecha Kedusha is problematic. Because when you don't have a minion and you're doing something as if there were a minion, but it isn't really, then you get into a stage of halachic confusion that is really not ideal. You know, none of these things are forbidden, but they're that may not be there. There certainly is room to criticize them. on the grounds of it being confusing or an imitation. But again, you know, you can do it. Just, you know, and I'm not saying it's us, or I'm just saying that that's one reason why there's critique of this type of thing.
Thanks.
I think it very much depends on the time and place. That's the whole issue. It's not, as you say, it's not really a halachic issue. It's more a sociological issue, mm-hmm. I would say. Maybe you don't agree with that, but, you know.
Right. I think to the extent that it confuses, something that makes people confused about what the real halacha is a little bit problematic, but you're right. You're not looking at something that's a clear-cut prohibition at all. The difference is between things that people say everybody across the board says is 100% fine and people that not everybody is happy with. But you're right. Bottom line, there we're not talking about something that is hasar. And different people have different approaches.
Okay, any other questions? I guess I'll, right? Feel free to speak up now. There's the bell saved you. You didn't have to discuss women prayer groups in great detail. That's a lot discussed, but I actually think that's a less of an issue today from what
I mean, well, a lot of the question that comes up with women's prayer groups is really with Kriyat HaTorah. In other words, the women, just women getting together to daven together is something that every Orthodox girls' school women do. Girls do. Women do. It's a normal thing to do. The question is really women having a Torah reading, and that is a very interesting question that, you know, I think Lori will probably get into in much more detail when we talk about Kriyat HaTorah. So it's not like we've actually skipped over women's tefillah groups entirely, but we've sort of discussed the less important question of women's tefillah groups, which is the davening part, and we have not yet arrived at the more interesting question, which is the Kriyat HaTorah part. Is that fair?
That's very fair. I think that's the topic next week. I have to double check. Lori is back next week.
Next week, yeah. Next week is Purim, I think, because Purim is coming up. And then I think Kriyat HaTorah, but you have to check with Lori. I think Lori wanted to fit Kriyat HaTorah in before
Purim. Right, so we still have 3 weeks before Purim.
Right. Well, then next
week. All right, I'll discuss with Lori. We'll let her know.
We're either going to do Kriyat HaTorah or Purim, and it's up to her and you.
Right, that's okay. Very good. Okay, thank you for that.